Thank you for joining us for Life in Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law.
'Cause I'm the tax man.
Call now with your tax questions at 252-222-4848.
I'd like to welcome Andrew Foster from Harvell & Collins, a.k.a. the Tax Man. I put the number out there for tax advice, but also for life advice as well, too, Andrew. You can handle both topics equally.
No doubt about it.
So some of the issues have settled over the last couple of days with the municipal elections done and some of the national races we saw in Virginia and New Jersey. Virginia is done and in the books. Jersey, I think it's still up in the air. But all those tax plans they have up in Washington, those big bills, the sausage is still being made.
I feel like we should change the theme song to "As the World Turns."
It's up to you. Build back better.
Cause that's what I feel like it's been the last few weeks. Obviously, Mike, we've gone into some detail because they're still trying to figure it out on Capitol Hill as to how they're going to pay for this particular plan. And we talked last week about the proposal of the billionaire tax is what they called it. And how they were planning on trying to tax unrealized gains of billionaires, which basically just means we look at what their wealth is and we tax their wealth. And we say you owe 15% of whatever you own at a set time.
That's easier said than done, isn't it, Andrew? Because, I mean, what you have to look at as far as one's income is our annual filings. But, you know, what people amass over their lifetime, that's a little bit hard to...
Difficult. Yeah, we talked about it. I mean, you know, like you're looking at mostly stock values on this, Tesla, Amazon, Apple, things like that. But, you know, it is just, we talked about what happens then. Okay, now you've taxed them. Now they have to go actually generate the cash to pay the tax.
Pay the tax man, yeah.
And it's just one of those interesting things where I told you this is a slippery slope, Mike, because once you get one of those provisions in the tax code, we've always said that we're not going to tax individuals until there's a sale, exchange, or transfer of an asset. So therefore, if you put this in the code, now all of a sudden you have a provision that says we can tax you based upon what you own. And where is that going to stop at the end of the day? So that obviously came and then it seems to have went. And now we're looking at more at different proposals and different things that are being inserted into the bill at the moment. And a couple interesting notes I wanted to mention to our listeners. You know, one of the things, the above the line deduction for union dues.
Really?
So an above the line deduction, which basically means it doesn't matter whether you itemize your deductions or not. You can take it kind of like the student loan interest deduction that I mentioned that I'm fond of. You're able to take that without having to itemize your deductions. That's made its way into the plan at the moment. The next thing that's on the table is the state and local tax deduction cap. So you have to remember, we have to think back to the Tax Cut and Jobs Act with President Trump. And what did he do? He capped the amount of state and local taxes that you could deduct from your federal return to $10,000.
Yeah.
So the rationale behind this, Mike, was that a lot of these states that have higher tax rates,
New York, New Jersey,
California, and then you have some states with no state taxes.
Florida,
you'd have some local taxes relative to property taxes. But the bottom line was that they were trying to close the gap, saying that each state's a little bit different and we just need to go ahead and cut that out. We'll cap you at $10,000 and make it more fair to every taxpayer. So states that don't have a state income tax aren't subsidizing those taxpayers in states that do have a high state income tax. Well, the initial proposal that came out was we're going to do away with that cap for the first 5 years of Build Back Better. So what that would mean was that it didn't matter how much state and local tax you pay, we're going to let you deduct it on your federal return, no cap. And there was infighting amongst the Democrats, because what does that mean, proverbial, Mike? Tax cut for the rich.
That's right.
Because bear in mind, who is going to pay the bulk of the state and local taxes? Mm-hmm. It's going to be the rich. Well, that doesn't go along with their theme of this particular bill at the moment. So the compromise that seems to have been reached, if they can actually get this thing ever passed, is they're going to higher the cap. They're going to raise it up to $72,500.
Wow.
So instead of $10,000, they're going to make it $72,500 for the full duration of Build Back Better, which would be a full 10-year period of time. So that has now made its way into the draft proposal of the bill. So a couple different things there that have been added since I was in here last week. Mm-hmm. Union dues above the line, and now we've got an increase to the state and local tax cap that was put in there by the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, both of which we know who that's going to benefit the most.
Right. Well, the union dues is obvious. That's the Democrat. That's, you know, who carries their water. And as far as, you know, the overall budget and union dues, how much does that really come out of, you know, hitting the IRS? But the other one is strictly a blue state, red state deal. You said it before. You know, I'll probably add Illinois and Michigan into that as well. But New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, California, because that's where the wealthy live, and particularly New York, not upstate, you know, but Manhattan.
You know,
we're seeing it in the downstate area.
So that's the kind of new things that have been proposed in the as the world turns with Build Back Better. The big thing is that, Mike, can this thing get passed at this point in time? You mentioned off the top of the show, we have election results now, mm-hmm. and we see who the American public is tending to favor, and the numbers are pretty staggering relative to a 10-point state in Virginia
that went 10 points for Biden
that hasn't elected a Republican in 12 years to a statewide race, flipping three spots, governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, all going to the Republicans. And then you see a very, like you said, a highly contested race up in New Jersey with an individual who ran a campaign, frankly, that the Republicans kind of just wrote off because
he didn't have
the money to self-fund like a Glenn Youngkin up in Virginia. So, you know, didn't even really put much money into that race. Mm-hmm. And yet here it is virtually tied, going to go to a recount more than likely. It's just interesting environment we are now, because the question is how does this affect our two key players in this, Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin? Mm-hmm. They are the ones that are the gatekeepers as far as this Build Back Better bill goes. And it's going to be interesting to see what these election results, how that affects them. I mean, here we have Joe Manchin in West Virginia. His next door neighbor state is what? Virginia. Right. And he just sees what happens there. And West Virginia is obviously much redder. Red is opposed to Virginia being purple. At this point in time. So how does that affect his thoughts on Build Back Better? Now, the White House has come out and has said the results in Virginia are showing that the American public wants Build Back Better. I don't know if that's the right message. I kind of question that, because what it looks like is that, you know, in my mind, you're looking at probably an even more scaled down version. It started at 3.5. Mm-hmm. Now we're at 1.75. I mean, are you looking at even more of a scaled down version? Are you going to get into the $1 trillion range, or maybe even less than
under a trillion
in order to get everyone to approve, to get Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema to approve this Build Back Better plan? But, you know, it's still very interesting. And all these proposals that have come up and how to pay this has been quite fascinating, because you know, you start playing out the different scenarios. And one of the interesting things, and what I wanted to conclude with today, is that the estate tax that I mentioned was very prominent in the mm-hmm. beginning of these negotiations.
We talked a lot about it.
Talked about how we talked end of step up basis potentially. Right. You know, we're going to lower the estate tax exemption, the lifetime exemption, down from $10 million down to $5 million right now. That's really gone by the wayside. And, you know, what I would tell our listeners is that's why, you know, at Harbell and Collins, we build flexibility into our estate plans, mm-hmm. because we're not sure how this estate tax is going to pan out at the end. But here you see where it gets front and center attention at the beginning of the process, this Build Back Better plan. And now it's almost out of the bill in its entirety mm-hmm. at this point in time. So that shows you how important it is to be able to allow your plan, your estate plan, to have the flexible nature to bend with whatever the estate tax is, unfortunately, at your death.
Yeah.
So that's the most important thing and the biggest takeaway that I want to tell our listeners, because right now, before it was, Paul was going to be on the phone with a lot of our clients talking about gifting potentially by the end of the year, mm-hmm. or setting up other trusts or other means to do some of this planning. And it turns out, you know, what we might be encouraging our listeners is the same thing we've been for several years, which is you really want items in your estate because you do have this $10 million exemption index for inflation at $11.7 million right now.
Right.
So, you know, we want to include them in there and then make sure your estate plan is perfect to make sure those assets go to who you want them to go to at the end of the day. So it is interesting how that estate tax provisions have just really kind of fallen by the wayside in these negotiations and discussions.
The only thing etched in stone in Washington, D.C. are the words on the monuments up there in the Vietnam Memorial. And, you know, as your colleague Wes Collins says, the plan for disaster is not having a plan.
That's right.
I'm paraphrasing him. He's more eloquently than I can, but it's true.
No, that's very true.
Yeah. So you got to have options. You got to have plans. You got to bet with Manchin more so than Sinema. I mean, I bet you Schumer and Kentucky Senator
McConnell,
they're just like probably just taking him to lunch, dinner, and every day. Because he could almost just become an independent, but caucus with the Republicans. His state is red.
Yes.
Heck, and you mentioned his border state is Virginia. Well, heck, it was part of Virginia.
That's right.
You know, just after the Civil War, you know, it parted ways. They became their own state. But they're very similar.
Exactly.
And, it's really a red state with the exception of probably Charleston and maybe the northern eastern region.
Yes, it's rare that you would see a red state like West Virginia have a Democrat senator for as long as they have in Joe Manchin. But, you know, he's got a big decision to make, and I think that's why we're seeing all these changes to this bill. And these changes that I mentioned today, I don't know that they're going to get Joe Manchin on board with this bill.
I don't know. We'll have another story next Thursday, and I'm sure the narrative is going to even be more unusual and hard to understand. And, you make it easy to understand, but it's going to be, wow, I can't believe we're at this point already. Look forward to that conversation. Andrew Foster, if you'd like to have a conversation with Andrew, call 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com.